bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, we're back. You never thought you'd have to see me again, but here I am. Ewan Rankin here to take you through the week's photographic news, all the product news, all the stories, what's been going on, what's not been going on, and answer your questions. If you've got a question, you can send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. I'll answer it. Do me best. Whatever comes up. Had a couple of good questions this week again. Thank you very much to those people that have bothered to take the time to send it in. I do appreciate it. And also, thanks to those people who leave reviews. Now, we've had a review this week. It comes from a person who, I'm not his number one fan, it has to be said. He's made some rather disparaging comments about the show in the past. Some, I think, are unjustified. But in the true spirit of openness, he's gone back into iTunes and he's redone his review. Jezza Fox, who wrote a one-star review some time ago, has changed his to a four-star review. Thank you, Jez. And it says, I've been very critical of this podcast in the past. However, in its new format, it's a lot better. Ewan keeps it going along at a good pace and offers interesting opinions and advice. Thank you very much, sir. Ironically, he was the one that I thought rather dogmatic in my previous interviews. And Laycock Abbey is in the village of Laycock. Yeah, numpty. Well, thank you very much for the rest of the review. That's fine. I take exception at the numpty comment, though, because competitions aren't supposed to be hard. And yes, Laycock Abbey is in Laycock. There's a debate, actually. It could be in Ilchester. But there you go. I'll take Laycock Abbey as an answer. The winner was of the competition, and a copy of FX Pro is going to them, Craig Morton. Well done, Craig. He sent in the correct address and postcode SN15 to LG. Thank you very much. And thanks very much for just the review. If you've got a review, send it to us. I read out every review that's given for the network on any show that I find it on. If I haven't read your review out and you've given us one in one of your local stores across the world, let me know where it is and I'll go and get it, because I can't get into every store every week to check every review. So if you got one, put it in. Thank you very much. It means a lot to us in our rankings. Let's start off the stories then. First one. I haven't even got the name of the bloke for this, because I got the pictures down from reading the story. I think it was on Petapixel. And I just thought to myself, what an arse. And when I realised I hadn't got his name, I couldn't be bothered to go back and find it. Some guy has decided that his Nikon equipment needed a makeover, so he's taken it all to pieces and he's blacked it off with tape and that kind of stuff. And then he sprayed it beige. It's his Mojave Lizard effect or something like that, or and it's a bit of camo in. So, there you go. That's what it looks like. He's done it to everything that he owns. So there's his entire list of lenses, and there's quite expensive lenses there, it would seem, and some flash guns, and his body, and everything. Yep, the whole shebang has been completely lizardized. I'm glad he's got a picture of it, because that's going to look like shit in a month. There's a reason that cameras are black, mate. And the reason that cameras are black is because they get scuffed up a lot. And they're also black underneath the black. So when the scuff comes off the top, it doesn't show through on the bottom. So that beige lens is going to look bloody awful soon. It looks great. No, it looks fantastic. Chatroom saying they like the look of it. I like it as well. I think it looks fantastic. I'm just well aware of the fact that looking at my own stuff, it looks like I've been dragging it around by a camera strap for the last 2 years, and it's only a month old. That's going to look disgusting in a month. I absolutely promise you. One thing you should never do is buy light camera equipment or coloured camera equipment, because it won't last. Buy black. Black's safe. Beyonce has been getting a bit upset after a series of unflattering pictures that have been taken of her. She's decided she's going to ban pro photographers from all of her events. Yes, if you're a pro, you won't be able to go. It all started after the halftime show at the Super Bowl, and some shots were taken by a guy called Ezra Shaw. There's one there that really isn't flattering at all. A couple have now been copied and put onto other things as well. So there's one with Beyonce, who is an Olympic weightlifter, which I think is rather well done, to be honest. They've even got the wristbands as well. And it kind of fits. It really does fit. So she's not very happy. So these viral images have now started going around the net. Yvette Noel Shaw, who is Beyonce's publicist, has said that she wants to start taking down the images, and she's already sent it out DMC takedown notices. Now, the problem is that because she's been sending out the DMC takedown notices, that means that the interest in the images has got to press, and the interest has grown in popularity, so there's been loads more of these images out there being found. Oh, dear. Now, the only thing that bothers me is you can't copyright an image of yourself. You can only hold copyright for an image if you took the image. Now, if you're at an authorised and sanctioned event where any pictures that you take are not automatically removed for you by the licensing body, you can't take these down. There's got to be some legal precedent here that allows her to do it if she is doing it and she is successful. But just because you take a picture of a celebrity, it's not their image to take down. I took a picture of Matthew Wright giving me the finger in Trafalgar Square. There is absolutely sod all he could do about it. If I want to keep that image up, there's nothing he can do to get it taken down. He doesn't have a right of privacy. And even though I was in an open area, it's not a public space. It was actually owned by Trafalgar Square, who are the owners of it, and you shouldn't get authority for tripod use and all that kind of stuff. But they allow free open pictures of people that are there on their sightseeing trip, which I was. And I happened to take a picture of him because he was there. He can't do anything about that. He's stuffed. So Beyonce, she's getting rid of everyone. If you want to see any images of Beyonce's at concert now, then you have to go to a website and you have to ask for permission. If that website is beyonce-tour.photoshelter.com. And that goes for everyone. So if you're CNN, if you're anyone like that, you have to get your pictures from there. So her image is now totally controlled. Whether it's going to stop the OK photos and that kind of stuff, I don't know. But, DMCA. Thank you, Adam, for correcting me. DMC, DMYA, YMCA, that was it. It was the YMC takedown notice. Google Glass has had some more specs revealed. There's people out there playing with it. Now, at the moment, it's voice-controlled. So if you want it to take a picture, you have to say, Glass, take a picture. And it does it. Now, you've got no exact idea of when that's going off. It probably responds fairly quickly. So at the end of your sentence, it will take a picture fairly quickly. But if you're timing it on something, you're absolutely knackered, I would say. So someone's suggesting that the Google are actually moving towards making it wink-activated. So when you look at something, you will wink and it will take a picture, which is a great idea. Absolutely fantastic. Now, whether it's any quicker or not, I don't know. And whether you're actually any more timing in your shots, I doubt it, to be honest, but never mind. If you want a Google Glass, you can't get one anyway, so who cares? Wink with an A, says Windrider. Thanks, mate. Do you like your space photos? I've got to say, I've got a bit of an obsession with space. I had it since I was a kid because I was in all the Apollo landings, that kind of stuff. It was the right kind of era for me. And I grew up with the space shuttle from kind of like 12 years old, 13 years old, coming around 14 was the first flight and that kind of thing. So I've enjoyed space a lot. And one of my favourite people on Twitter to follow is Commander Hadfield. Now, I did try and get him on the show, but he hasn't replied, so I guess he's not coming. But Commander Hadfield has made a video with the Canadian Space Agency, and it's how to take pictures in space. He gives you all the insider information about how he goes about doing it using his Nikon. And if I was in the cupola and I got sent up to the space station, I wouldn't get out of the cupola. I probably wouldn't fit in it anyway. But I would sit there and look back at Earth all day, every day, quite happily. One of the secrets that Commander Hadfield reveals is that because space is so dark and the Earth is well illuminated, it's kind of like shooting a big white ball a little bit. It's almost like shooting in strong sunlight in snow. So he's issued his guide on how to take the perfect picture of Earth from 250 miles away. Now, not many of you are probably going to be able to use this guide, but it's interesting to note. One of the things he's got is the Sunny 16 rule, he says. He sets his aperture to f16, then his ISO to 200, and pretty much most of the day, he can shoot at 1/200th of a second. Now, if he's talking about it being like shooting in bright sun and snow, one of the things I'd do there would be to deliberately underexpose and correct. And I've got to say, some of the images that have come back from the space station, I absolutely adore. I think they're wonderful. But there's got to be a fair bit of post-processing in these to get them to have the right tone and balance across them. Because I can't believe that you'd do anything but underexpose. And they've got to be shot in RAW as well, so there'll have to be some post-processing. But they are awesome images. Thank you, chat room. Absolutely right. And the one I've just shown there at the end is, it looks like someone's been trying to drill into the earth. It's brilliant. Absolutely wonderful. We like Commander Hadfield's tweets as well. He's a good old guy. Thanks very much, mate. And we'll send you a link to the show. And it's a shame you couldn't come on. But when you get back to Earth, see if you can come on the show. That'd be really cool to come and do a feature with us. Superb. And me camera. Oh, bloody hell. This is Tim Rudman. Now, Tim Rudman is very well known for his abilities in the darkroom. Mine are not so very well known, or they are well known because I don't have any. I'm not particularly talented, it has to be said, when I come to doing darkroom work. I didn't mind shooting in film, I just hated processing the stuff. There was a place called Colin Alford Labs, which I think is still going in Birmingham, in Hockley. And every time I shot, I used to just turn up there with a bag of films and I'd put them in for developing and they were brilliant. They charged me an awful lot of money, but they were well worth it and it'd go on the bill. I hated darkrooms. I absolutely bloody loathe them. Tim Rudman loves them, which is a good thing. And he's actually rather good as well. What he's doing is he's showing you how to print properly on black and white and also how to print properly on silver gelatin papers, which is very his speciality, I guess. He's running a workshop. It's on the 6th and 7th of July at Leeds College of Art. And if you'd like to go and learn more about how to do it properly, then it's £300 for the whole weekend. That includes your lunch and drinks on both days and the cost of any materials that you use during the course of the days. If you'd like to go, call Michelle on 01565 684034. It's a really good idea, fantastic and well done. Tim Rudman, there you go. He's running a workshop through Ilford Photographic. They're providing a lot of the materials, I would guess. But he's a well-known bloke for that kind of stuff, apparently. I don't know him. But the other problem is, it's the weekend of the bash. So don't go. I was debating whether I should read that story out or not in case some people went on the Tim Rudman thing, didn't come on the bash. It's the British Tech Bash on the 6th of July, the Saturday. So please, 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 don't go see Tim Rudman. Please. Thank you. That's the stories from the week. There's not a lot, actually, to be honest. Products we're into now. And Adam still hasn't sent me through me little things for me jingles to get us going. But never mind. First thing is the iPad telephoto lens. Now, this thing's not new, or this type of thing's not new for sure. There's been a load of these out there for quite a while. Adam's now apologising for being busy, which isn't going to wash with me, I'm afraid. And basically, it's a little sit-on device thing that goes on to the end of your iPad case, and it will give you an optical zoom. Now, you get a plastic shroud that has to fit onto your iPad, and then this telephoto piece screws into that. It will give you 10 times optical zoom on your iPad, and if you fit it to an iPad mini, you get a different frame for it. It will give you 12 times optical on your iPad mini. Now, I haven't had much time this morning to try and figure out why that is, but I don't think the iPad mini's got anything going on in the camera that would make a difference, because optical zoom is optical zoom. It would come from the optic. It wouldn't come from what the camera's doing. So whether it's 8 megapixels or 5 megapixels makes no odds. I can't work out why it gets 10 on one and 8 on the other. I'll have to try and run that by someone this afternoon who might know on the Mac show. We'll have to wait and see. The faked images that they've got on here look very, very good, because there's no way that one's bloody real. Not a chance. You would never shoot that with that contrast. that's Photoshop in extreme. They look great. 10 times optical zoom, 12 times optical zoom. Very good. If you don't mind carrying this thing around, I bet it's excellent. I'm going to the rugby, actually, in a couple of weeks to do the sevens. So I might take this in my pocket and they won't even know. Ah, that's a good reason to buy it. Where'd you get it? Photo Jojo. Those people that are causing me to become slowly bankrupt. Go and look at them. It's $25, which I think's all right, actually. That's not a bad price. You get the frame with it, and you get the little zoomy thing on the telephoto-y bit that you can twist and shout with. So there you go. What's it called? It's called the iPad Mini Telephoto Lens. That's all I know. Telephoto Lens. It's from... I thought chatroom were putting in a link to help there, but it's a link to something else. They're not listening again. Book of them. There you go. Photo Jojo, $25. I've ordered mine. I'm taking it to the rugby and I'll show you the results. What's next? Do you own an Android phone? Because if you do, you're going to love Helmut. Yes, Helmut is an application that's been developed by Kostas Rutkauskas. And he has launched the world's fastest scanner for film. Hang on, why do I need an Android phone for that? You're saying, ah, he's going to sell me a light box underneath. No, no, he's not. He's not selling you anything. He's giving you this thing free of charge. And it is a free application. It only runs on Android, unfortunately, at the moment. But once you get the application, all you've got to do is take your negatives or transparency film and put them on a lit surface of some description. So you can either stick them on a light box. He says on there you can even put them on a window as long as the lighting's fairly balanced and even. There's some chat on the story that I read that you could even use a laptop screen displaying a pure white background and it would help. But I've got a review coming up that I got from a very kind chap named James Hart, who's a very good fellow on The Big Show. Once you do it, you start the helmet application, you hold your phone over the image and you shoot, plain and simple. And it comes through and there's a whole pile of tools in the application that you can use to adjust your image. If you'd like to, you can use reverse, so you can go from a negative to a positive image. Crop and straighten, levels, color balance, hue and saturation, and you can even apply an unsharp mask if you really want it, which is excellent. Then, if you want to, once you've done it, it can directly push it out to Facebook, Twitter, Dropbox, and Flickr. So it's pretty powerful. It's really powerful, and it's free, so it can't be all that bad. Helmut, there we go. Now, James Hart is one of our panellists from The Big Show, very good and knowledgeable chap, an Android user as well. And I wrote to him this morning and said, can this really do this? Because it does sound a little too good to be true. And he said, I'll have a play. And he's had a play. And he says, and I'll read his thing here, it's quick at taking photos of a negative on a light box and doing crop colour mods. The faff is getting your phone to focus to get the decent shot, but once you have, it's not bad. What's frustrating is I can't find my kids' lightbox at home where I can get a full white background. The Nexus 7 does make it give a white background, but it doesn't. It gives us a patterned effect across it. That'd be more, I would say. Laptop might do better. But it takes photos and negatives, and it does the things that it says it can do. Whether it's any good, I couldn't tell you, but the software works very well and it looks very pretty. And then a couple of minutes later, he actually got it to work and he sent me a picture. There's the picture. He's done that this morning. I don't know who that is and I don't know what the occasion is, but that was one of his negatives. And he shot it and he's processed it and he shoved it out through Helmut. And I think it looks really good. I'm really impressed with that. If there's a version comes out for iOS at free, I'll be bloody buying it, that's for sure. It looks great. It looks absolutely fantastic. And James says it works. So it can't be all bad. Thank you, James Hart. You're a lifesaver. I was going to try and get him to come on to do a thing, but he's got a heavy cold at the moment. Let's get one soon, James. Right, products. What have we got? We got the Cybershot. Now, Sony have released the Cybershot. What's this one? The DSC-TF1. Yeah, it doesn't look brilliant. It's not that good. It's a 16 megapixel super HAD CCD censored camera. It's got no pop-out zoomy lens or anything like that. This is true compact with a bit on the top and that's it. Away you go. It's a 4x optical zoom. It's shooting 720p video. If you're a camera producer, what on earth do you want to stick 720p video in? It's just wasted, utterly wasted. 360 degree panoramic shot feature, and it runs on micro SDs, which I really hope never take off in the prosumer range. I bloody hate the things. I had enough trouble keeping hold of the SD cards that I've got on site without losing micro SDs. It's waterproof, which is great. It's dust proof, which I got a question because I've been to a lot of workplaces over the years, powder coatings places, food mixing and that kind of stuff where you've got fine grains and powders, and also working in subsurface environments with rail and stuff like that. Fine dust gets bloody everywhere, and to make something dust proof, you're talking about effectively hermetically sealing it, you know, real almost vacuuming like seals. So I don't believe that for a second. And it's freeze-proof, which I don't get what freeze-proof is. Unless it's full of water, then it's impressive. But if it's not full of water, it's not impressive. This thing will cost you £180. So it's not the bank break a bank breaker. It will do what it says on the tin to a certain degree, I think. And I looked at some test shots with it, and they were fairly passable. It's available red, blue, or black. But as we said earlier, for God's sake, buy black. And if you want something for holiday, go and use in the pool, give it to the kids, 180 quid. It's not bad. That'll work. It's okay. We can live with that. We've got another offering from Cybershot later on, so that's that one. The next thing we got is the Focus Twist. Now, if you've got an iOS device that works with iPad and it works with iPhone, Focus Twist tries, and I say tries in inverted commas, to do what the Lytro Field camera does. Now, Lytro Field cameras, if you're not familiar with them, they're a long square tube that doesn't have a shutter button as such. You focus it on an area and you hold it and it takes. Depth of field. This says it does the same thing, but just in your standard iOS device. Focus Twist. It kind of does. I've had a play this week and downloaded it. It's £1.49 if you want to buy it in the UK, $1.99 if you want to buy it in the US. And it does do what it says on the tin. I shot a picture of it, of my phone. I've tweeted it out. And it gives you a link to a website where you can do the fast focus thing, but you can only get two focus points. It's not like the Lytro where you can touch anywhere on the image and it will focus on that point. It does one foreground and one background and nothing else. But it does take a nice picture. It's okay. And it puts it in your photo stream if you give it permission, and it's okay. You can't mess with it in the photo stream, but you can mess with it in the application once you open it. And it kind of does do the changing focus thing. It's a nice little novelty, but in practical terms, until you can output it and look at it on something, I can't see what the point of it really is, other than to play. And I've had a play, and it works. It does it, I think, by taking two images and then matching them together. If you move, then it does cause a problem. You've got to be very, very still with it. So it's not true light field camera technology or anything like that. It's just taking two images and mushing them together. But it does it pretty well. And for £1.49, I thought it did an okay job. Have a play. It's well worth it at that price. Something else that's out for iOS is the Avery application. Now, Avery is described as a very powerful and potent photo editing application on the review that I read. It's okay. It's not bad. I wouldn't describe it as potent, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's fairly easy to use. It's got a lot of controls. It's easier to use it on the iPad than it is to use it on the iPhone with the upscaling, and it uses your standard camera images, no problem at all. There's lots of changes that you can make. It's got crapper filter system, so it does an Instagrammy type effect on things, and you can buy more of those as in-app purchases. Watch out for the in-app purchases, because if you buy all of them, you're spending like another 10, 12 quid to get the stuff, and you don't get an awful lot more than what you already have, the toy camera stuff, the New York vignette features and those kind of things. But the basic package is fine. There's lots of editing tools, and if you sit and have a play and learn them and work them out, they're not bad at all. But it's trying to sell you in-app purchases. It's free to start with, so why shouldn't they, I suppose? The thing that's nice about this, and I really liked about it, was that the image that I took on and had a play with, it was a crappy image I didn't care about that was already on my iPhone, and I had a mess around with the filters, and it's okay, but they're crapper vision, just like Instagram and those other things are. But what was nice is after I'd finished messing with it and I'd really buggered it around some at Rotten, I thought, right, that's it, I'm done. And I clicked done thinking, oh my, where's this going to be saving this? Because that's interesting, which is why I picked a crappy image. And it's non-destructive. It does save it as a brand new image at the end of your photo stream. So your original image remains intact and you've just got another version of it. If you open that and make another one, then it will give you another version and so on and so on and so on. So it's a free application. If you get it, I would recommend it, absolutely recommend it, because it's free. Download it, play with it. It doesn't destroy the images that you've got. So there's your win for a start. If you want to buy the in-app purchase stuff, then go ahead and do it. But I don't think you need to. What it's got there in terms of enhancements, in terms of red eye fixing and coloration and hue and saturation, is absolutely brilliant. Go give it a go. Well worth it. Well worth it. And that's just the time and effort, because, of course, it's free. Promises, promises. We're back to another Sony camera. Yes, the Sony Cybershot JZ700 is here. That sounded like a paid review, says Adam. Yes, it was, mate. They paid me a fortune for that review. You got me. Busted, rumbled. The JZ700, yes. Sony Cybershot. Now, this is the compact ones, but we've got a zoomy out lens now as opposed to a fixed lens like the last one had. It is a 20 megapixel CMOS sensor. So the sensor's a wee bit bigger. There's a cutaway picture here, so it's not that big though. Should do better with low light as CMOS. 24 to 720 millimeters of lens. So that's going to be fairly wobbly. It's not the biggest of bodies either as well. So there's not a lot to grasp onto here to steady yourself. You can't get your hands around the lens to kind of steady yourself particularly well. You'd be shooting on a tripod or a monopod at the very, very least. It's f3.5 to f6.3. ISO range is 80 to 12800. Optical image stabilization. It's got Wi-Fi and it's got GPS built in as well, which is good. And it shoots 1080p video. Not bad. What's the thing that sets this apart from everything else? Well, there's two things. Firstly, Sony are claiming that this is the smallest super zoom in the world. And this is pretty tiny from what I've worked out. It's not very big at all. And the second thing is the price. It's $450. It's not a big high-end compact. This is a mid-range, £300 to $400 little compact. It's a good compact as well. There's some little add-on features as well, which are going to be very impressive here. The first one is it's got a little set of directional mics that look like they're off the Zoom HD4. They should be very good mics. They link in through the hot shoe. So you've got a data feedback from the hot shoe from the audio and then you've also got power to it. The other thing that I noticed that was brilliant, and this is where DSLRs fall flat on their faces, this thing has got a monitoring microphone out. So you can put these mics onto the top of the Sony. They will link through and give you additional better quality audio, one would hope. You could probably put a filter screen on top of that as well, or a wind cap to try and stop it, but you can also monitor the audio that you're getting back that goes onto the video, so you can monitor for clipping and things like that. I use the Zoom HD4 for work, and I've got to say the only reason I use that, because actually the audio quality recording of the 6D is superb, but the problem is I can't monitor it, so I can't run the risk of going out and shooting on site and then coming back and all of the audio is clipped. So I have to go out of the camera into a Zoom HD4, out of that, and then back into the camera, so that I've got a monitoring loop to the camera, I've got a monitoring loop to my ear, and I've got two recording sources. And 99% of the time, I'll find that the Canon's done a great enough job, but I can monitor the Zoom HD4 and clip it back. And DSLRs have got to get that sorted. They really have to, because it's a critical thing that's stopping pros from really jumping over to them. But this does it. I think, for the money at $450, I think that's a cracking, cracking camera. Adam in the chat room, a monitor out and a compact camera. That's a fantastic feature. It's not on the camera. The monitor out is on the mic itself, so it's slightly different. I think it's great. I think it's absolutely great. It would be my recommendation. I haven't even played with it yet. The test shots that I saw look pretty fine. Much of a muchness. I think when you're buying in the camera market at the moment, Alex and I said this a few months ago, there is nothing to... There aren't crap cameras in the compact market. There are better and there are good and better cameras. That's it. The compact market is flooded with cameras that will take decent pics. So if you're worried about image quality, don't lose too much sleep. Certainly over the main ISO range, you know, 100 to 400, you'll be fine. And the last one is the Fujifilm FinePix JZ700. I got the wrong camera there. Sorry, that's the other one's not the JZ700. This thing is a 14 megapixel CMOS sensor, good again. 8x optical zoom, pretty impressive. ISO's 100 to 300 to 3200, and it's got optical image stabilization as well. Shoots full 1080p video. It reckons it's going to shoot HDR as well as a few other things, and it's got some preambled set feature crapper vision filter things again. One of the main features that it shouted about in the story that I, on their homepage rather, not the story, on the Fujifilm website, is that the main feature on it was that it had easy to read fonts. Which, if the best thing you can say about your camera is it's got easy to read fonts, no one's going to buy it. Or it's particularly aimed at the poor vision 90 plus pensioner market. The other thing is, and I mean, this is a small compact camera for, you know, this is handbag camera, it's pocket camera, it's kids camera, it's that end of the market, I would say. And they haven't released a price and a date. I mean, it hasn't got, it's, you know, 3.6 to 6.3 on the lens. It's not got massive zooms. It's not, it doesn't do anything to the extreme. It does very basic things. Why would you wait, make people wait for the price and the date? Is that a feature on a camera? Do they really care? Do people want to read books on it? Says Adam. Very good. Excellent, mate. Again, Windrider puts another bloody link in. I'm going to have to ban him because he keeps putting links in. I think he's helping and then he's not. He's on something else. No price, no date, no idea. Don't buy it. Waste of time. I've got to say, my pick of the week, if you like the photo stuff, I've got to say, I think the super zoom, the 10x zoom on your iPad thing, I think is brilliant. And the Sony Cybershot there, that last one, is absolutely brilliant. I think for $450, that could be an absolutely mint camera as well. I was sitting thinking, well, it's the smallest compact, smallest zoom. You maybe could mount that underneath the helicoptery thing. I know I keep going about my helicopter. By the way, your name for the Sony camera is the HX50V. Thank you very much, mate. Very kind. And Windrider said that link was in reply to the previous story. I do apologise, mate. I wasn't slagging you. Your questions. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishsatnetwork@gmail.com. I'll read it out. I'll have a go answering it. We shall see what shall come out. First one's from James. He says, I've just bought a copy of Apple's Aperture 3 and I wanted to know if the panel, brackets you, know of any tutorials available either as a podcast or on video. I'd start with iTunes because I'd be surprised to find out that there wasn't something in iTunes on Aperture. Let's just put that in now. I'll do a quick search while we're carrying on. I'm not a great Aperture user. I have used it in the past quite a lot. And worryingly, everything I know about Aperture, Will Green taught me. Because our first time I ever met Will Green was when I was using up some one-to-ones when I bought a new Mac and Aperture 3 had just come out. And I said, oh, give us a bit of training on Aperture 3, will you? And Will Green taught me all I know about Aperture 3. Draw your own conclusions from that. Podcasts. I've looked for Aperture on podcasts and I can't find it. There's books, podcasts. Oh, here you go. Inside Aperture Podcast, Aperture Podcast, Aperture Connected, Aperture Drum and Bass, which I think is something completely different, and the Aperture Family Podcast, which again, maybe something completely different. There's some books to buy on Aperture as well in the App Store, going from about $5 upwards. So you can get those and read them. They look quite good, actually, some of them. There's a nice little series there that says by Ian Ingram Young, and he's got How to Use Aperture. Oh, no, that's General Aperture. It's not Aperture, the software. Newbie's Guide to Aperture 3. That's from Minute Help Guides, $2.99. I'm going to download Ian Ingram Young stuff because he's talking about very basics of depth of field, focus, focus length, that kind of stuff. Very good. Looks very pleasant. I don't know if there's nothing in the apps that I can see, but if you're into Aperture, I mean, to be honest, I think you'll probably find that there will be a Scott Kelby book on it, maybe, or you'll find a book on it in your local Apple store. I know Jim's in Glasgow, so you should be able to get one of those fairly easy. Sitting down with the books, the best thing to do, and also sitting down with the software and having a play with some images you don't care about is another good way of doing all of that stuff. Will Green taught me Aperture. Gabe has written in. Hey, Ewan, question for you in the photo show, but first let me compliment you on keeping things going solo. I like the crew, but I kind of think that you alone makes the show go a bit quicker and in a good way. Listening to each show, I was convinced... No, it's not that. That said, I know you've got limited time, but I wonder if you ever think of including a segment in which you critique someone's photos. Maybe it doesn't have to be a submission. It could be something that's a classic photo or something that you could talk about. Talk about composition, lighting, some other aspect techniques. I know you're super busy. If you're ever at the time, I think it'd be great to show that and be much better as a feature. And as someone who teaches, I can tell you that I'd pay money to take a class webinar from you, just a thought. Well, you don't have to pay me. There's nothing stopping anyone sending any images in. I mean, when we get questions, we occasionally get the odd one that comes through where it's got an image. I've got this effect. Could you get me a solution? But those have been few and far between. If you've got an image and you're out there shooting at the weekend, send it in with a question and say, could you give me a critique on this? And we'll talk about cropping. We'll talk about coloration. We'll talk about hue and saturation. We'll talk about the diversity of your contrasts from white whites and black backs, and go from there. Yeah, Gabe, you can be the first, mate. You send me an image in next week, and I'll critique it, mate. I may regret that. Now, here's the question. He says, when not torturing young people with learning, I try to create images. Specifically, I'm shooting short narrative projects and or doing interviews, very low level client work, shooting events. For the narrative stuff, especially, I'm pretty limited on lenses. And I've done some research, and it seems that old Nikkor lenses from the 70s are one way to get a nice film look for my videos and not break the bank. I rented a 24mm f2.8 and loved it. Sometimes the images were a little soft, but that could also be my lack of skill. Anyway, what are your thoughts? I'm looking for primes. I shoot a GH3 and want a 50mm equivalent, but I was thinking an 85 f2 and an 18mm f2.8. I found a great supply of these lenses at a great price. What do you think? Now, my first thought was whether the Nikon F lenses would fit the Panasonic GH3. And I've done a bit of digging, and there is an adapter you can buy, which I'm presuming Gabe has got. But the adapter doesn't give you any pass-through on electronics or anything like that, so you're only going to be stuck in manual focus. If you're buying back to the 70s anyway, the chances are that they're manual focus full stop. If you want a 50mm equivalent, the GH3 is a crop sensor, so you're going to have to get a 35mm. But having looked at the coupling, Gabe, I noticed it's about 10 or 12 mils thick, deep, something like that. So that crop factor is going to go out the window. If you buy a 35mm, you'll probably find that'll be 2 times or maybe even 2.2 times because of the fact of it's pushing away from the lens. So you'll find that your coupling is probably going to act kind of like a macro tube a little bit and push the focal length further out. So I reckon you're probably going to be at 70mm with a 35mm lens, which means you're going to have to go back to that 18mm, and the 18mm is probably going to get you up to about 40mm at worst. I think you're going to struggle to hit 50mm, because for 50mm you're going to have to get a 20mm lens, 22mm lens, which I don't know whether that even exists in the F-series. I mean, I'm not a Nikon man anyway. You can definitely shoot on the GH3 with the Nikon adapter. It'll fit. There's no problem. You won't do any autofocus, which you're not looking to do, I guess, with video anyway. But I think you're going to have to maybe do a few tests yourself on lenses that you've got, but I would suggest your crop factor is going to go higher because you're pushing the lens even further out with the adapter. So you've got the crop factor of your sensor, and you've got the crop factor of the macro effect of the adapter as well. Let me know. Send some pictures in, mates, that you've taken with your new combos, and we shall have a go with them. Last question is from Carl in Texas. Hi, Ewan. Love the show. Thanks for all you do with BTN. Gives me so much to look forward to every week on the long ride to work and back. I've got a simple question. When it comes to canvases, to wrap or not to wrap? So when you buy a canvas, you get your canvas, and depending on where you go, if it's a decent firm, they'll ask you whether you want a wrapped edge or an unwrapped edge. And basically, when you've shot your image and it's printed out, they'll print it onto the canvas. And the wrapping that goes around the back of the canvas frame, you can either have it so that the picture will make the wrapping, or it will be a white strip. Now, why don't they just do that all the time? Well, the margins on pictures, on canvases, have always been the key thing when you frame them, because you'd have the thing stretched, and periodically, because it had stretched when it was being painted, you'd have to re-stretch the canvas to then frame it. So if you look at all the old masters and so on, you aren't actually seeing the picture that they painted, because the things had to be re-stretched, so the image has gone around the back of the canvas slightly, and the borders, the edges, are what they use to check fakes, because no one's ever seen them, because they're in the frame. So you can have that effect with your prints, whereas you can wrap it around and there'll be parts of the photo that will be completely hidden. So if you had a really good photo that was getting, you know, at the risk of being copyrighted, you'd have the borders to prove that it was yours. I personally, my own view, is that canvases look better when there's a white strip around the edge. I prefer the image to sit fully flush on that and then the white strip to go around the edge. And that also means then as well, when you do come to frame it, if you want to go for a canvas frame, you're not cutting huge amounts of the image away, which is going to change the balance of the image that you shot in the first place anyway. It'll change your cropping and it'll change your thirds point as well if you shot with rule of thirds or something like that. I like not wrapping the edges with the image. There you go. That's my vote. What's the vote of the chat room? Wrapped edges or unwrapped edges? A moment's silence while we wait. Lynda.com, good point. Wymoon's in the chat room and says, why don't you go to Lynda.com? They've got a complete tutorial for Aperture 3. Lynda.com/aperture-training-tutorials/155-0html. We'll put the link in the chat room. Wymoon's agrees with me. Unwrapped. There we go. Who would I recommend for good canvas printing, says Adam. You take your life in your hands, mate, unless it's a person you can go and look at. I mean, the last canvas I had done, and I don't do a lot of them, I did one for my parents, for my dad's birthday, and it was just, we'd shot some family images, and I sent them off to Photobox, and they did a really good job. I was well impressed. What you want to look for is, don't necessarily look for just the cost of it. Look for the frame itself. Ask them what the frame is made of if you get the opportunity. And the one that came back from Photobox was spruce, which is really nice because spruce will avoid twisting and warping, and it'll also it's really strong. So if they've wrapped it tight, you won't find that it slowly degrades the frame underneath. I bought one from a firm a couple of years ago, and it was a really big one. I rang them up and I said, what's the frame? And they said, it's spruce frame. And it came back, and it was MDF, and I went absolutely mental. I got all my money back, and I kept the print. But it went on the wall, and I've got to say, it's lasted really well, but it's static, it's on the wall, and it's fixed with four hangers around the edges, so it's not on a wire where it, you know, it runs the risk of being tilted regularly. It's physically fixed to the wall in tight position. So if you want to buy someone, if you want canvas printing, ask them what the frame's made of, and always go for someone who does it in hardwood or a spruce or a pine or something like that. Spruce is the best by a long way. Batwinch says unwrapped. Adam says unwrapped. There you go. See, unwrapped is the vote. Carl, you have your vote, mate. The British like unwrapped canvases, not wrapped edges. If you've got a question, you can send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I'll answer it. I promise I will. Just send it in. And send in some pictures as well. Same address. Send us your image. You don't have to send a huge image in. You don't have to send the original in. Just crop it down into 1080p and 1920x1080, and we'll stick it up. And you don't have to crop it to that size, but what I'm saying is make it small enough so it fits in that. I won't crop it to look at, because we want what you think, not what I think. The Bash is coming up. 6th of July. Now, old what's-his-name is doing his black and white prints thing, but we're not. We're going to be in a sunny lit room. There'll be no dark room and chemicals around, and there'll be no printing paper, and there'll be no negatives or transparencies. We're going to get drunk. It's going to be a fun day. There's going to be loads of food. There's going to be loads of party games. There's going to be loads and loads of podcasts being done, including a great, great event where Chiz from The Gamer Show is going to take on absolutely everyone there to see who's going to win at the Gamer Show quiz. It's £20 a ticket. Now, we're not trying to sell tickets like it's an event where you get entertainment. It ain't Nebworth or anything like that. There's no bands on unless James comes with Jam Folder again and that kind of stuff, or Russ's crew come up. All you've got to do is get yourself there, buy the ticket, and everything will be provided. All your beer will be there. All of your food will be there. There will be nothing else to buy. You just need a hotel for the night or a mate's house with some floor space. And if you want to, you can come to a curry, which is the night before, the night of the 5th. That's a separate ticket, and it's underneath the Bash banner that you can see here on the video feed. Buy yourself a Bash ticket. buy yourself a curry ticket. £10 comes off your curry bill, and the whole of your Saturday is free. Under 12s come free of charge. If you're bringing any kids, not a problem. Bring as many as we want. That's okay. My kids are going to be there. Steve, who comes on the big show, his kids are going to be there. Aaron, one of the listeners, his kids are definitely coming. Kids are more than welcome. Kids and partners will be there all day. No problem at all. But just let me know that they're coming so I can make sure we've got enough food for them. That's all. So that's the bash. It's on the 6th of July and the curry's on the 5th. Plain and simple. Now then, why am I doing it now? It's still April. The problem is I've got to confirm the venue, which is big enough to hold 400 people, at the end of next month. So on the 25th of May, I think it is, I've got to say to them, I'm definitely taking it. I've paid a deposit, but it's 400 quid for the venue, just the venue for the day. It doesn't include anything else. That's just the venue. So unless we've got enough people to fill the venue-ish, i.e. not have it bigger than my house, then I won't book it. I'll get my £100 deposit back and we'll be fine. The 35 of us will have a party somewhere else. But the problem is you can't buy a ticket after the 25th of May. You've got to buy it now. It's not because I want your money. It's not because I want the cash flow or anything like that. It's because I've got to book the venue. So I've got to know how many people are coming. Please, please, please book your ticket. If you can't afford a ticket at the moment and you're waiting for you to get paid at the end of the month or something like that, that's fine. Send me a note, an email that says, I'm definitely coming, but I've got problems at the minute. That's okay. I won't tell anyone at all. But you must have bought your ticket by the 25th of May. Otherwise, you may not be able to buy a ticket at all. I can't cope with the last minute rush. For the whole of June, there will be no bash tickets sold unless we've crossed the threshold where we've got more than enough for the current venue that we've booked in. And I went out for a beer with Kevin last night, who's in the chat room, Alt Games, and he said he's been on the website and had a look around, and it looks like a nice venue. It really is a nice venue. It's brand new built. It's 12 months old, effectively. They've got a massive garden outside where we can do the roast and we can do the kids playing, and we've got stuff inside. There's a badminton court on the inside as well with a big high vaulted ceiling. So we've got tons of room to sit and have a mess around. If you bring some of your little quadricopter things, as long as their propellers are safe, you can fly them around in the big space. We can have loads of fun. We're going to have the world, and this is, we're going to have Guinness there, I reckon. We're going to have the world card cutting championships as well. Mm-hmm. We will all be there cutting cards. It will be a knockout tournament, and the winner at the end will get some goodies, I promise. And 12 South has sponsored us as well. They're sending a whole pile of goodies to give away on the day. No cash, just loads of cool stuff to give away, loads of tech. So you're going to walk away maybe with something free? Who knows? Come to the bash, 6th of July, be there or be square. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. We say it every week, and they are brilliant. What's card cutting, says Batwench? It's where you cut a pack of cards, woman. Good grief. UK2. Buy your stuff from them because they're good people. They've got a whole pile of services that they offer for web, and they sell everything, and we get offer codes for it, and we pass those offer codes on to you, and you get a massive saving. The other thing is that UK2 pick up all the bandwidth. We use phenomenal amounts of bandwidth every week from all the shows that we put up. We're putting up 8 shows a week at the moment, and UK2 pick up the bandwidth for all of it. If you haven't listened to all the other shows, you really should as well. Because the more bandwidth you use, the more popular you are, the more happy UK2 are. And Paul Wright tweeted out today that he just bought another domain from UK2.net with discounts, cheap at half the price. And they retweet it as well. They love you. Craig, they've been with us for 3 years. Craig at UK2, hopefully he's going to come to the bash. He's looking at setting the date aside. And you can say thanks to him again. And they're with us for another 2 years. Cheers, UK2. Right, we'll be back again next week. We're going to have a whole pile of music and stingers and that kind of stuff for the section. So stories and questions and products. And also, Gabe's going to send in the first picture for critiquing and reviewing. And if you've got a picture that you want me to have a look at, or you want to send a picture and say, look, I've taken this picture, I think it's a really nice scene, but why doesn't it work? I'll do my best. I'll try and help you out if I possibly can. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.